about that. Well, welcome to the Saturday morning return of KPCW's fabulous film panel with all sorts of stuff going on besides construction outside our walls. That we have possible Oscar contenders coming on in Christmas movies and the new Star Wars. And last but not least, of course, is the announcement just a day or so ago of all the feature films coming up for the 2020 Sundance Film Festival. So to help us analyze and make sense out of all of this, we have Katie Wang, better known as the Impresario of the Park City Film Series.
Hello.
Impresario, yeah.
Impresario?
exercising my word power. And two of our Friday film reviewers, we have Barbara Bretz.
Morning, Rick.
Morning. And Libby Wadman.
Good morning, one and all.
Good morning. And they had a little Sundance preview just yesterday, and I think they Barbara, you were able to get to that. So scanning the program, what's interesting, and I don't think they'll kill you if they give away a few secrets.
This is all off the record. No, I'm not going to make any big announcements because I don't want to spoil the privilege of having been at the round table. It was really interesting just to hear them talk about what the films look like sometimes when they come to Sundance, you know, what they're able to see and then what ends up on the big screen is so much different. But some of the scoop is that there are lots of famous people planning to attend. They will remain nameless at the moment. There are a few things that have not been announced yet, so keep an eye out for a couple more interesting films to be announced. There are some really great panels to look forward to with some big names, again, that a lot of people might want to take in. There are also a couple of remakes, and I was so sure that I had seen one of the originals at the festival, but Cooper said no, so it had to be in at the film series. And so there's a remake of a Swedish film called Force Majeure.
Oh, yes.
About
that's a great
the avalanche.
Movie. Yes.
Well, when you look in your program and you see Downhill, that's a remake
in English of
that Swedish program. And if you look at the cast, Rick, remind me, it's Will Ferrell.
This jumped out at me when I was going through the program, because to look at the stars, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Will Ferrell, Zach Woods from The Office, I thought, oh, well, this will be a jolly little comedy. And then the description is, quote, barely escaping an avalanche during a family ski vacation in the Alps, a married couple is thrown into disarray as they are forced to reevaluate their lives and how they feel about each other. I mean, I don't expect a Daniel Day-Lewis and Glenn Close on this.
Right. No, so it really will be interesting, especially if you've seen the first one, and it might be kind of cool to preview that first one before you see it. There will be some funny, maybe darkly funny elements. You can't help it with that cast, but I do think that will be an interesting, and there's another remake of A Real Sweetheart that came out of a former Sundance Festival, and it was an Irish film called Dark Horse about a village that kind of all went in together and bought the horse had some success with it. Well, there's one on the program called Dream Horse, and that is basically a remake of that Irish film. And another one to really look for, put a star by, is called Wendy, and it's by the director Ben Zeitlin, who, if you remember, had a huge, huge breakout hit back in 2012 called Beasts of the Southern Wild. A lot of people still say, you know, that's just been my favorite film forever. And so it's called Wendy, and I'm sure that will have a lot of attention paid to it as well.
Oh, this is, I was just looking at, this is kind of the off-kilter version of Peter Pan.
Right.
Oh, right, where the characters come together. Yeah, it's Peter Pan and I read that. Well, I think it's funny because I feel like
Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland. About the Sundance catalog. It's like you read through all of these things and you have all of these ideas swimming in your head. And then you get to the movie and you're like, which one was this? I don't even remember.
I think we can create our own movie just
based on reading these and blending them all together.
Yes, exactly, well, and you know it's going to be imaginative because Beasts of the Southern Wild was really such a unique film and a real breakout hit. So that'll be fun to watch for. And then as far as docs, a couple to keep an eye on. Of course, the big, big, big one is going to be Miss Americana, which I didn't write down the director, but I always look for Morgan Neville and anything he's attached to. And he's a producer on this one, but it's about Taylor Swift. And so I'm sure in anticipation of her being here, you know, that will be a very big draw. And then another one of my favorite directors, Ryan White, who was here last year with Dr. Ruth, and he did Case Against Date. Yeah. And he has one this year called Assassins. And so those are just some that jumped out at me. How about you guys?
Yeah, and there was, I think there was, besides Wendy, I think there was one called Shirley, which I think is a fictional documentary about I think it's in
they move in the couple journey. Moves in with Shirley Jackson and her husband the author
the woman who wrote The Haunting and The Lottery and apparently strange things happen from that point on.
Yeah, of course, Eva Longoria is in that one, so she's kind of a big name in the cast.
Yeah, there's a. Some of the, you go through some of the plot descriptions, and in some ways it's hard to unfair to judge the films by the plot descriptions because some of the Sundance hits when they were in the program they just sounded like the ordinary old stuff, and there is one that one of the strangest. Catalog descriptions is called 9 days in the dramatic, and is described as, quote, in a house distant from a reality we know, a reclusive man interviews prospective candidates, personifications of human souls, for the privilege that he once had to be born. Sounds like a typical weekend in Deer Valley.
Actually, you're not too far off because that one was shot in Utah. But in a really unique place.
Yeah, there are two Utah films.
Do you know where it was shot? The Salt Flats.
Oh.
That's not unique. At least part of it.
I mean, that's not unique for
us. Well, that would cause people to hallucinate, especially if they're there during the summer.
It's like being on the moon. When you go out there, it's otherworldly. It's awesome. But yeah, there's two films that were shot in Utah that are in there this year.
To paraphrase Kevin Costner, is this Limbo? No, it's Utah.
You're not in Utah anymore.
Libby, what other stuff has jumped out at you?
Well, I guess the first thing that jumped out at me was the emphasis on page 2 of the program of breaking down by percentages the number of women directing and in how many, in which categories, the number of people of color. And the percentage of LGBTQ.
Yeah, I think they've done that for a couple of years now.
I haven't noticed it. I mean, it's like,
It's certainly been a focus. And when that's really interesting to note that, because that is, I think, a trend that you're seeing across all festivals. And Sundance, I think, was kind of on the front end of that. I was just at Telluride. It was a similar kind of sentiment. But what's interesting is now we're getting more diverse stories, right? We're hearing from different parts of the communities that have always existed, of course. But now we'll have kind of a more complex, I think, more diverse, more colorful set of stories that aren't kind of the same old, same old. I mean, certainly you have returning directors and there's a lot of alumni that like to come back, and that's part of Sundance.
There are a lot of alumni from labs and things.
But they like to cultivate new voices, and it's nice that they're being so explicit about that. My guess is that that's always been part of what they've tried to do, but now to be more upfront of, it's really valuable to hear from people of color, for hear LGBTQ stories, because these are our stories. These are not just stories of others. These are stories of us as a collective. So I think that's interesting.
They're also trying to be more diverse with the press who's viewing and critiquing those shows, making sure that they have all fields represented so that those shows you're talking about, you know, get more of that attention.
Yeah. So no, I think it's great. I just find it very interesting because I've never seen.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, I'm limited to Sundance, and I have to say I haven't noticed that in the past years, but this year it's like, bam, right there. Mm-hmm. And very interesting.
Okay, well, we'll come back in just a minute and we'll hear more about what's on the program that interests you. And And from Katie's point of view, what films are on the program that she thinks she'll sell a lot of popcorn for? Welcome back to the film panel, and I think we're rejoining our panel to the sounds of gremlins and construction. Well, how can you tell? And I think
if a drill comes through the wall, it's fine.
Yes,
don't worry.
Yeah, good, yeah. Well, you know, there's a debate about if Die Hard is a Christmas movie, but Gremlins is definitely.
It's totally a Christmas movie, totally. And there's a lot of consternation in the art house world about. You know, these repertory films with Disney and Fox and all of these, you know, consolidation of the studios of what's going to happen to our favorite films. And Die Hard keeps coming up and you're like, it's not really an indie film.
Not particularly.
Christmas, yeah. He does wear a Santa suit at some point.
Yeah. So, yeah. Maybe we'll have time to get to that later. So what, as Martin Scorsese has raised the topic of what... is really happened to the indie movie or the adult movie or the more artistic movie in this age. But I wanted to get back a little bit more to the Sundance program. But Katie, for a prospect to you for something that, you know, might draw audiences or get them stirred up?
You know, I would... I'm not sure I can answer that question because it's so interesting to me when you go into, I mean, I think we've all had this experience. You look through the catalog, you're getting your tickets. It's, you know, you have to fill that last slot. You're like, I got one more ticket to buy. You're like, I'll just watch that movie, whatever. And that's your favorite one. It's always the least expected films. And that's what I love about Sundance is that you never really know what you're going to get. No matter what people tell you and what the description says.
Oh, the descriptions are really a very little use.
And it's just completely different than what you actually come out of. And that's what I love about it. And then that communal experience of seeing it. But then there's one film that's, as you look at kind of the awards ceremonies coming up and what's going to be nominated, one film called Give Me Liberty, which was at the Sundance Festival last year. It's one of my favorite films. It did terribly at the box office. It's about a young Russian emigre that is driving a van for people of with disabilities, and it's like this comedy of errors. It's hilarious, it's timely, it's all these things, and it just was, you know, a rock sunk to the bottom. So it's always hard to tell, and that's the challenge. You go to Sundance and you fall in love with something, and then you're just not sure, is that going to be viable outside of the festival environment? And it's really hard to tell, honestly.
Yeah, I think we all have our list of favorite movies that went out from Sundance and nothing happened.
What is the rest of America thinking?
Yes,
you should love this movie.
I was hoping, and I haven't heard too much, that I was hoping that there would be a pretty good reception for the film Little Monsters from last year's, which was about the set in Australia with Lupita Nyong'o as an elementary school kid. A teacher has to take care of her children when they go to a petting zoo and the zombie apocalypse breaks out.
I hate that when zombies show up on your school trip.
Especially on a field trip. Yeah. I had PTSD. PTSD. See? Yes. I had it from doing field trips with small children.
Yes, Libby. Yes, Libby is someone who has lived through some of that. did you have field trips that felt like the zombie apocalypse?
I might have wished the zombies had shown up.
Right. Sometimes the zombies are in the classroom. They're actually inhabiting the bodies of the children.
Yes. Hey, piggybacking on something Libby just said about how sometimes the descriptions don't help. If I'm not mistaken, one of the premieres called The Glorias, if you look at the cast, it's Julianne Moore, Alicia Vikander, Bette Midler. It's not a documentary. Well, it's a drama about Gloria Steinem, but it's called The Glorias because, if I'm not mistaken, all of these different women are going to portray Gloria
at different
Steinem
stages.
At different stages. So, I mean, that might be a really unique one, you know, to look out for.
Wasn't there... maybe a film about Bob Dylan or something that kind of did the same thing, had different people.
Is that the one that Dylan wrote and was here?
Including in Cate Blanchett.
Yeah.
Yes.
And at the very least, we had the dual Brian Wilson, in which we had the young dewy-eyed Brian Wilson played by Paul Dano and the older, burnt-out Brian played by John Cusack, I think. So a little bit of a variation on that. We got Ethan Hawke playing Tesla, Nikolai Tesla.
Yep.
And that's already gotten, they already announced that it had received the Science Award because it mentioned science.
Oh, it's the Alfred P. Sloan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, yep, science.
Just the name Tesla.
Just the name Tesla. Mm-hmm.
But I always love the award that's given before anybody even sees it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, and really?
And there's some show, there's some kind of arts and pop art documentary stuff. There's a film about Natalie Wood. And there's a film about the Go-Go's.
Isn't her daughter in that movie?
Natalie.
Maybe I misread it, but it mentioned her daughter.
Natasha Gredson Wadner is in the film and is the producer and about the Go-Go's and a documentary about high schoolers who compete by doing monologues from the playwright August Wilson.
And Ron Howard is directing a documentary, Rebuilding Paradise, and I'm sure that'll be a quality piece as well.
Yeah. There's Rebuilding Paradise as we speak.
Yes, absolutely. There is a film in the spotlight section called The Climb, which started out here as a short, and actually was at Telluride, and I was sitting in the audience and noticed that there were a couple of Sundance folks there, and I loved it. It is hilarious. It's one that I'm hoping to bring back to Park City because the premise of the short is these two friends are climbing this mountain in the French Alps. And as they're climbing, he offhandedly, one friend says to the other, "Oh yeah, I slept with your fiance," and then shoots off. And that starts it, and you're like, where is this going to go? You can see it as a short, but you're like, how is this going to be a feature? And it is awesome. Very funny, very clever.
You know what would be cool is if you could get the short and show, how long is the short?
Oh, I think it's maybe less than 10 minutes. I think it's short. I think it is
cool?
a short.
To show the short and bring this
Well, the beginning
back.
Of it is the short. So the first the first sequence, whatever time frame that is, 10, 15 minutes, is the actual short. And then it just goes, goes off in this wonderful way. But that is one that as soon as I saw it, I was like, I'm definitely bringing this back. And I'm like, and I'm pretty sure that this is going to come back to Sundance because it is just fabulous.
And since you brought up Spotlight, when you're looking for that one extra ticket to burn, don't hesitate to look at those Spotlight films. And sometimes you might even be able to find a trailer and get a little better idea of what they're like because they have premiered someplace else and been a crowd favorite. You're very likely to pick a good film when you get one from Spotlight. And my favorite film from the whole festival last year was Maiden, and that came from the Spotlight category. So.
And it's nice that they've created that because there are, of course, certainly films. I mean, you have a year of festivals to be able to bring something back that really deserves more attention, and just that extra boost from Sundance can't hurt when it comes to theatrical.
One that I thought sounded interesting is in the U.S. documentary area and Boys State, where they take 1,000 17-year-old boys from Texas and they get together to build a government from the ground up.
And Boys State is a program that a lot of high schools participate in. I mean, it is a real program.
Which is what I thought. I didn't have time to look that up last night, but I just thought that, okay, let's see how 17-year-olds do.
Is it Lord of the Flies?
Yeah, it could be
Utopia?
Much worse.
Yes.
And there's some very interesting ones in the kids section. I'm just going to plug the kids section.
Yeah, and there's three this year, which I think is less than in years past, but they're always well worth seeing. And they're actually, the ticket price for those is reduced. So if you're looking for a little bargain.
Come Away is the one that sounds very interesting to me, and that has Angelina Jolie and Michael Caine, among other people. But I always like the kids' movies.
Oh, yeah. Well, because they're made for, and that what's nice is the programming is that it's interesting enough for adults. There's an intellectual component.
There's something for everybody.
Exactly.
And that's a good kids' film.
Right.
When
it won't terrify
everybody.
Your children or scar them for life. It's not, a Pan's Labyrinth. But, as an adult, you can appreciate it and enjoy the story with your your younger members of your family.
Yeah. Among the documentaries, I mean, one of the ones that I will looking forward to is the documentary about Ren and Stimpy.
Yes, called, course, I have that marked down. I'm so excited.
Called Happy, Happy, Joy, Joy.
Yes, Happy, Happy, Joy, Joy.
And speaking of offbeat casting, there is one called Falling, which is kind of sounds like a fairly ordinary plot about a father-son drama about a cranky old father from who's a farmer moving in for an indefinite stay with his son in L.A. And the son is played by Viggo Mortensen from the Green Book last year, Best Picture winner. The interesting thing, it sounds like the cranky father is going to be played by Lance Henriksen, who is best known as kind of a cult figure from action movies, from Aliens. He was Bishop, the android who redeems himself in the eyes of Ripley and says, you know, not bad for a human, you know.
Laura Linney's in that too, and she's always great.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see Lance doing that one. Before we break, from the meeting yesterday, Barbara, anything, they doing anything special for Cooper's last year?
You know, they really didn't get into that. I mean, I think if he gets away without tearing up at every introduction, it will. Oh, well, his mother's coming. Does that count? His mother's going to be here. So we're going to try to get her on the show to interview her at some point.
Well, much he's not leaving. He's going to in a different. He's going to be a kind of a.
In fact, we might see him more, which would be fun.
Yeah, but this will be his last festival, I think, he directs.
Okay.
I think they're more likely to be planning something big for next year because it's the 40th, if I'm not mistaken.
And that would be the first year for the new for his whoever succeeds.
Right.
That would be their first festival.
Right.
So I don't think, and they haven't, I haven't heard anything anyway about who that person might be. No. The rumor mill is quiet at the moment.
Yeah. The problem, I don't know if 20, you know, next year would be the 40th of a film festival in Park City. I wonder how much attention they'll draw to it because it wasn't officially Sundance when it started in 81.
Right, it was still the United States Film Festival.
Right. We're like, let's just slide with that.
They did announce something that I've heard on the news out there as well, is that there is going to be a bonfire the second week of the festival.
Are we going to burn the guy? What's going on?
No, I don't think any effigies, but there's supposed to be a bonfire to kind of draw out locals.
Oh, maybe in the roundabouts down by Jeremy in the center.
I'm sure my neighbors would love that.
Well, that's one way to get rid of the submissions they didn't accept, I suppose.
Joke, tell that to the filmmakers.
Yes. Okay, we'll be right back with, and we'll kind of talk about what's coming up in terms of Oscars and big Christmas blockbusters and stuff like that.
You know, that's a good film panel question, too.
Stuck in the middle with you. Welcome back to the Quentin Tarantino dance party.
I will opt not to have my ear cut off. Thank you.
In the spirit of Sundance, yeah. That should be a theme for a film panel show one of these days, is songs that you now think of entirely differently after the way they were used in movies. Or Elton John's Tiny Dancer from that classic scene in Almost Famous. But
nice segue.
Yes, but classic stuff coming up. What have you guys seen that might be a prospector for Oscar contenders? And I know last year we had the Rami Malek won Best Actor for playing Freddie Mercury. So do we have what about are we going to give an Oscar to Taron Egerton for Elton John or any? Anybody see that one?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I really liked that. I liked the way they combined it wasn't a straight biopic. They combined that element of fantasy in the songs.
Yeah.
No, I really liked that.
Yeah. Although do be aware, listeners, if you saw it on Delta, you probably saw an edited version.
Really?
Yes.
They took out a couple of scenes.
Yes, they did.
The airline version?
Yeah. Well, the airline version is always, you always wonder what they take out, but that one was fairly
But, I mean, they did a good job of making it, because I watched it again on there, but I'm like, wait a minute.
There's a whole sequence that's left out of his life. What's going on? Yes.
But I understand they've restored it.
Yes. Yep. But I don't think he's actually, well, the Golden Globes, of course, are coming out on Monday, so there's been lots of chatter about the nominations, what will be, who will be nominated and all of that. And I think he's kind of on the sidelines, which is sad because I really did like that film as best actor.
Well, Katie, any particular people or films that you're rooting for before we know, who gets nominated?
Well, it's interesting when you look at kind of the best pictures, because, of course, Golden Globes does it slightly differently than the Academy Awards. If you look at the best actress category, I mean, I think it's some of the ones that I thought would, that Renee Zellweger for Judy, Scarlett Johansson for The Marriage Story, Cynthia Erivo for Harriet, and Saoirse Ronan for Little Women. These are the speculations, of course, because the nominations aren't out yet. But, I think all, strong performances. There was nothing that was really, nothing to me anyway. I don't know about you guys. It was a surprise hit. I mean, most of the films that end up getting nominated are ones that people have heard much about. One exception being 1917, which I haven't seen yet, but that was kind of a surprise. And then, of course, you have films like Knives Out, which is just coming out right now. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of spanning, which I'm so excited about. Yes, I love Agatha Christie,
with you.
I'm excited. But there are films that people haven't really heard much about because they're just hitting theaters now.
Tune in Friday for the Friday film review.
Oh, nice. because it's such a short season this year. The Academy Awards are like almost a month early.
Who plays the housekeeper?
In Knives Out?
In Knives Out. Anyway, whoever she is, check it out, because she's in at least one, maybe more, movies, and a lot of people are saying, wow, she's going to be around. You're going to be seeing her face.
Yeah.
So have to check out her name.
It's interesting to see a couple
of
films that premiered on Netflix have actually done quite well theatrically, as well as, of course, on the Netflix platform. And that's been a surprise, actually, for a lot of, exhibitors, film bookers, all of that, to say, we kind of think like, maybe the Netflix films won't, be as viable, but Marriage Story, The Irishman, certainly. I mean, they have just done gangbusters.
I think they're willing to take more risks to, at this point, to get themselves out there as being where mainstream movies can be seen as opposed to the theater.
Right.
And I know that was the case with The Irishman, Martin Scorsese's film. Robert De Niro's in it, but Martin Scorsese said he could only make The Irishman because of the deal with Netflix.
Right. Mm. But it's interesting to see they're now gaining acceptance within the awards circles, because that was always the conflict, right? With Cannes, and it has to be a theatrical premiere. And so they are, of course, conceding and having them in theaters. But, the majority of people will see it probably on the online platforms.
And I do want to mention one of the possible front runners, The Farewell, was one that did premiere at Sundance last year. Might be a potential nominee.
And I should mention, just to acknowledge that when we said Knives Out, our producer gave it a silent
yes, that's who I was agreeing with.
That's right.
It's kind of a reflection of the changing times. I mean, I had to go see Irishman in a theater, because Marty would want me to.
He would.
He would want
definitely.
Yes. He would want me to see it on a big screen.
He's been very vocal about that.
Hopefully, we're not to the point yet of, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers looks great on my iPhone.
Oh, yeah, but you're only getting three of them.
Yeah, right. You can only see slightly. Yeah, my eyesight's not good enough to see
three and a half brothers and maybe a lead from maybe a fourth one or something.
Right. Another one to see on the big screen, and I don't think this is going to be in any Oscar lineups, and kind of snubbed by the Grammys too, but Bruce Springsteen's Western Stars. Mm-hmm. Man, see that on a big screen with a good sound system. It's really great. But, I'm a Springsteen fan,
partially. we're going to see if we get some more Oscar nominations for actors playing real people. Like, I think, Katie, you and I were kind of bopping around Telluride, and I know we had Renee Zellweger as Judy Garland, which if you would not believe it was her unless someone told you.
Right. Yeah. No, she did a fantastic job. And, I mean, it. an unbelievable film, I think. And she did a great job of, I think, you know, I mean, she's not, you don't lose yourself the same way you do with someone, you know, some other actors where you kind of forget that it's this actor playing it. But you, she really inhabits, I think, the, you know, the pain that really was Judy Garland's story, kind of the sadness of that, and really brought it to life, I thought, in a really interesting way.
Yeah, and I thought it was probably a performance. The picture is not as, overall, is not as good as the performance. I think the overall picture was, but speaking of actors playing real people, and Barbara, I think you just saw, you know, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. You know, Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers. And I know you've already done the Friday film review on
that. Right.
But just a little bit of your take on that.
Well, you know, when I give a movie review, I don't like to tell the whole story. I like to do a lot of research into the backstory. And when I first wrote up my film review, it was like 5 minutes long. So I really had to edit out a lot. But so I listened to a lot of interviews with Tom Hanks. And he really just, as I mentioned in the review, it changes your life to play somebody who just is that endearing and well-respected. And so physically, he didn't transform into Mr. Rogers. They said they used a wig and some eyebrow extensions. But the main thing he really had to do was just slow down.
Yes,
slow down. And listen. And he said, once you do that, you do kind of find yourself becoming a different persona. And that, of course, is a lot of what he was famous for. He did a great job. He did say that little song that begins the show where he walks in and changes the coat for the sweater and changes his shoes, that took 27 takes. He said just to get the timing right, to pitch the shoe and catch it.
And, and getting the shoes off and on. Well, they apparently had to rig them.
He gave us a tip for that. They had a size or two larger shoes, so they slipped on and off easily. But no, that must have been really powerful to film that movie.
Yeah, and tell me your take. I mean, my automatic reaction to that is Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers seems almost too good a fit, because Tom Hanks is also
a good person.
I mean, he's a nice guy. Tom Hanks himself is a nice guy, playing a nice guy. And it just would have been more interesting if you had had, well, let's say if Kevin Spacey still had a career. Kevin Spacey as Mr. Rogers.
But then you would go in thinking, like, what dark story about Mr. Rogers don't I know? Like, what?
Yeah.
Well, and they
are
did
you going to ruin my childhood?
Well,
they did manage to refute, you know, it's not a documentary. Right. So it's not like the documentary in that it laid out all these facts, but they incorporated things they wanted you to know. Like, dinner conversation, and somebody addresses the fact that, oh, you're not eating meat. And he says, well, I don't eat things that might have had a mother. So they don't say he was a vegetarian, but they work that in to the show. They show him swimming laps that he did every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he's in a conversation with someone, a curious person said, do you have tattoos? Were you really a sniper? Because those were some of the myths that were out there about Fred Rogers, is that he was a sniper Navy SEAL and all of this. And so, no,
that is fake news.
I'd still like to, Kevin Spacey is just, good morning, boys and girls. I have a box with me. Well, do you want to see what's in the box? we'll save that for the sequel.
Tom Hanks was the perfect casting for this role.
So maybe, So, one of these days, Tom. Gotta give Tom his third Oscar. And so, before our time runs out too much, but. I mean, what are you looking for the next month or so? I mean, anybody out there besides me curious about what they're going to do with Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker?
It's all about Baby Yoda.
Yeah. I think a strong middling response there from the film panel. Ladies.
You know, personally, I'm looking forward to Cats. I just think that's going to be really fun.
That's a,
James Corden, Taylor Swift, Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah, okay. That's going to be good.
Yeah, I just think that's going to be really, really
good music,
fun.
If nothing else.
Okay, I'm looking forward to Little Women. Sorry.
Me too.
Okay, that's one more time.
I'm sorry, a little more indie side. Yes,
okay,
I know Cats is going to be interesting.
Show of hands. Do we have show of hands for Cats? Enchanting or creepy?
I think it'll be enchanting. In a creepy way.
It's going to be hard, though, to do.
Or creepy in an enchanting way.
Right? And it'll be interesting to see, I mean, having seen it on Broadway, that how exciting it was when it first came out. And this is, you know, I grew up in New York, so I saw it on the first wave, right? It wasn't when it had been playing for 50 years or whatever, not literally that long. But just to be immersed in that, and the cats come out in the audience, and they're playing with you, and it was just so magical that it'll be interesting to see, can they capture that magic on the big screen for the next generation that can't see it as in the theatrical format, right, as a play? And that, you know, that'd be interesting because there is that suspension of disbelief, obviously, that they're humans or cats, but just that the way that they were able to just enthrall the audience.
Well, and I think so much of that is the up close and personal, you're right there with them energy, because I know I saw War Horse when it was at the National Theatre in London, and you
fascinating
just fell in love with those horses.
Totally forgot they were puppets.
Yeah, they had such personality. Yeah. But and while you've got feelings for everything going on in the movie, the horses don't quite relate to you because they are real horses and they haven't got a clue that you're out there in the audience. Whereas those puppeteers knew how to work the audience
And to react to people.
Yeah.
I mean, that again with cats, right? And the songs are so great. I mean, who doesn't love? You know, they kind of stick in your head. Yeah. You know, decades later.
The whole thing of there's a certain level of stage artifice that somehow, if you put it on the screen and you make it literal, sometimes it doesn't
translate.
I think it's going to be combined with so much computer generated fantastic background that I think it's really going to enhance that imagination part of it.
But definitely one you'd want to see at a theater, because you want that sound to just envelop you,
right?
I mean, that's not, I mean, as much as I know streaming is, there's a big controversy, and certainly I'm on one side of that conversation, but just the immersive experience of being
it's better than nothing. But it's certainly not the best way to do it on your own screen.
Yeah. If you suddenly want to be transported, the theatrical experience, I think, is second to none.
Definitely.
For movie going, anyway. Yeah.
And we're going to get back to that right after the break. And speaking of the streaming versus the old style of movie making, we'll take a look at Martin Scorsese versus the Marvel movies. Be right back.
Film panel question two.
Forget your troubles, come on, get happy. You better chase all your cares away. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy.
And we're back. And thank you, Judy, from her last MGM musical, Get Happy. Well, we'll see how. But Martin Scorsese apparently has not gotten happy about the trends in recent movies, as it was been reported a couple months ago that he was criticizing Marvel movies, that, quote, nothing is at risk, that he had an aversion to the Marvel flicks, saying they were not cinema, that they were displacing the filmmakers who are actually, you know, for him, as he put it, let's see, many of the elements that define cinema as I know it are there in Marvel pictures. What's not there is revelation, mystery, or genuine emotional danger. Nothing is at risk. The pictures are made to satisfy a specific set of demands, and they are designed as variations on a finite number of themes. And so they're sequels in name, but they're remakes in spirit. And everything in them is officially sanctioned because it can't really be any other way. So his grievance there. What do you think here? Now, Barbara, I know Barbara is in in line for every new Marvel picture. She camps out.
He's being facetious. Yeah. No, I'm not necessarily a Marvel fan. Well, I looked up the definition of cinema, you know, as to whether or not they should be included in cinema. And it's the production of movies as an art or industry. So I don't see how you can say they're not cinema. However, if he says he doesn't like the Marvel movies and that they scare him, that part I get, because generally I'm not a big fan, although I did love Black Panther when I went to see it. I'm not sure is that a Marvel movie? Mm-hmm. So I did like that. I felt it had story, imagination, there was danger, I mean, all of those elements. So I did like that. Perhaps because I don't see them that often, I might have enjoyed it more than if I saw them on a regular basis. But they do kind of scare me a little bit, in just like the reality show trend seemed to take over so much quality TV. You know, I hate to see other more in-depth movies go away. So I agree with them and I don't agree with them. They definitely have their place. I hope they don't take over.
Yeah. And Libby?
Yeah, I would second what Barbara says. I look at it this way. They are what they are. There is an audience that wants them. My fear would be that because they do make so much movie for the filmmaker, you know, the like Universal and all that.
So much money.
Money, that they will become more of a thing and the other movies less of a thing. But if you go back through history, we had black and white movies with the piano playing, mm-hmm. no sound other than the live piano. And then they came in with talkies and people said, oh, that'll never work.
Right.
And then they came in with color and, oh, well, that looks funky. And if you take kids now, I mean, I can say for my own kids, when I used to show them like one of their favorite movies, just escaped me, but it was with William Holden. Oh, Sunset Boulevard, of course, in black and white. And they finally got into the movie, but for a long time, and they were fairly young kids when we watched it, for a long time it was like, well, where's this? Where's that? And they were missing the color. When they were kids, there wasn't the CGI that there is today, but there were more special effects. And so movies have changed over the course of time. And I just think, whether I like it or not, this is just one of those changes, that it's part of the evolution of cinema. And it is definitely industry, if nothing else. So yes, it's cinema by that definition.
If they start producing Marvel films where you have to go to a theater and you have your own joystick, you know, to actually participate
they have
in the
those,
movie.
They
oh,
have
please!
Those. Yes,
no.
And the whole theater, like your seat moves.
No.
And, oh, yeah, no, you can do that. Yeah, it's interesting.
Wow. Sorry, I brought it up.
But I think what the opportunity is, and you think about a director like Taika Waititi, right, where he did Thor, right? And when he was here at Sundance, he did an excellent panel, and they were talking about indie directors that are now doing these mainstream kind of Marvel type films. And he says, you know, the opportunity is to teach people something and to bring in indigenous culture, because that's, you know, his, you know, main driver being Maori.
Which Black Panther was a good
and
example.
And Black Panther, exactly.
Too.
Same thing, where you're kind of, and Bing Liu, I refer to this a lot, so I'll have to stop at one point sunset this, but, you know, with Minding the Gap, he said, oh, I made this film about skateboarding. He's like, but I tricked people, because it's really not about skateboarding. It's about domestic violence. It's about relationships. It's about family. It's all these other things. Like, but you got to get people in the door.
Yeah, you got to make it a safe zone for them to take in the horror of the other things.
Absolutely. And so, and I think that, you know, again, Waititi is a great example, that he brings in all these other elements in Black Panther, that you're talking about diversity and culture in a completely different way than people are expecting from a Marvel movie. And then all the money that he made, you know, from Thor, he's now made Jojo Rabbit, which is a fantastic movie, right? And it is more indie. So I think that it's not as black and white, perhaps, as it's being presented in the theaters, mm-hmm. or, you know, in the conversation about Scorsese. But, you know, I mean, there is that element of, you know, I have young children. There are a lot of movies out there that just will numb your brain. And, you know, I hope that does not become the norm, because there is this opportunity, and cinema has such this great capacity for empathy and for, you know, the unexpected pleasures of learning about someone else's story or hearing your own story on the big screen, that really, to me, that is what film is about.
To let you know you're not alone, that relationship with the characters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in theaters, you know, I mean, to me, obviously, as an exhibitor, that's kind of my bailiwick, is that you should see it with collective. I mean, even watching Downton Abbey, to see that with other people was an unexpected pleasure. I just hadn't really anticipated how much more fun it would be to laugh to Maggie Smith's, you know, sharp barbs with, you know, 100 other people as it was to just, you know, with me and my husband sitting
at home. Which that alone, you know, that alone is what indie films and Sundance really has been the deepest thing for me, is experiencing that with so many other people who are so uninhibited to react. You know, a festival, but especially Sundance audience, I mean, they react. There are sobs. There is laughter. And it's just so much fun to react with other people.
Well, I know the first time I went to a documentary at Sundance by myself, it ended and it was like, oh, wait a minute.
You have to talk to somebody about it.
And fortunately, there were some very nice ladies next to me who were like, oh, would you like to join our conversation? I'm like, yes.
I need to unpack this with someone. I don't know you, but hi. Anyway, let's talk.
Well, this touches on the theme that we were discussing further about, are we losing something in cinema when the method of transmission is changing? It's not in a theater with an audience reacting as a crowd. It's streaming, and maybe if you're lucky, you know, you got a friend with a big screen TV, so you can so you can still get somewhat the experience. It, like Barbara was saying, what films really need to be on a large screen, and you know, I think Scorsese had pointed to something like Lawrence of Arabia,
definitely,
or Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, where he points out that, you know, the widescreen, you get all seven brothers, and you don't have the pan and scan where they got, you know, three brothers for part of the scene, and then they shift over and you see three of the others.
Or you think about Rear Window, so much is going on, right? It's like looking at a complex puzzle and you're just like, whoa, what's going on in the different windows? You know, it's just, I love that. I mean, as a city, as someone that grew up in a city. Like,
to be able to see those details that are too small.
Right, for a small screen, you would miss, you know, someone making dinner and someone having an argument and what's going on over there. And wait a minute, what are they hiding? What is that clue? You know, Hitchcock was so good at kind of dropping these little breadcrumbs, but you have to pay attention to the details in his films to really get the beauty and the magic of his stories.
I think it's a rare film that doesn't lose anything by not being seen on the big screen. I mean, just about everything is enhanced in some way by seeing it on the big screen. I think if you don't see it on the big screen, it will get to more people. There's more opportunity, so there is a positive slant to it. But I just think anything that you can see on the big screen
is
not a waste of time.
But on the flip side, I was curious to see how Downton Abbey was going to translate, because I love Downton Abbey. And maybe it's because of the type of show it is, what it's about. But I was interested at how well it transitioned from the little screen, where they tone everything down, that they were able to expand on it, and it looked like it had always been made to be on the big screen.
Absolutely.
So,
I mean, grand sets.
I can go both ways on that.
Absolutely. And I watch a lot of films, you know, on my computer screen, which is, you know, of a reasonable size. And then every single time, as you said, Barbara, I'm always struck when I see it in the theater. I'm like, oh yeah, I like this, but now I really like this. Like, this is way better than I thought.
Well, the size alone has
just
such an impact on you.
I mean, these
giant characters.
Absolutely.
You know,
the sound,
people.
And you think if Beale Street Could Talk, when we were watching that in the theater, and they had surround sound, and someone's talking, but the sound came from behind you, and I kind of turned around. I was like, is someone talking behind me? I was like, oh, no, that's just how the sound designed. It was awesome.
And I always think of the reaction of a lot of directors when their show for the first time premieres at the Eccles Center, you know, in front of 1,800 people on a screen that big, and how moved they are to tears often, you know, after that experience of seeing their own work. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, one that definitely lost going to the small screen was Apollo 11, which was at Sundance.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that needs as big a screen as possible.
Even just so you can read the time marks. You're like, it's so tiny even on the big screen.
Well, and I know people who watched it on small screen, and they missed in the crowd shots.
Yep.
They didn't see who all was there. And I thought when I saw it as a premiere last year, that it was videotape. You know, somebody created a time-wise, but it was real video that NASA paid cameramen to shoot of the crowds.
Yeah.
And I knew it was real when I saw Johnny Carson walking in. Johnny Carson was there? I'm going, small screen, sorry.
Yeah. So I think it keeps the art of cinema alive to have it in multiple formats, but certainly I think there is work to be done, and certainly Sundance does that, of you know, making sure that that communal experience, the theatrical experience, is not lost.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's, you know, we don't want to be the curmudgeon of like, oh, yeah.
We need a Mr. Rogers of films. Mr. Rogers' goal was to bring quality programming to children. Yeah, yeah. And so we need that still to be alive in the cinema as well.
There's so many innovations with the iPhones. Maybe the next thing with the iPhone will be you can play the movie on the iPhone, but you plug into these goggles that'll put you into virtual reality big screen.
Or a screen that pops up out of it.
Yeah, it grows all around you. It's a holodramatic kind
of screen. In your Tesla self-driving car.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Thank you for checking in with another fabulous KPCW Friday film panel. We'll try to get the group together again right after Sundance. But in the meantime, keep going to movies. I'd like to thank our panel, Libby Wadman, Barbara Bretz, and Katie Wayne. And special thanks to BC, who is not only the expert pilot of our producing board, he's also our emotional support DJ, getting us through the past hour.
Great signs, too.